So, welcome everybody on the morning session about really hard topic, which is hiding and detecting traces. My name is Paula Januszkiewicz. I am from Poland. I am working as a penetration tester for iDesign team. I do have also my company that is called Secure. I am an MVP on enterprise security, MCT, and all these blah, blah, blah Microsoft titles. Yeah, sorry for that, but, you know, it's hard to mention them all. I am also one of these guys that you have access to a source code of Windows, but I'm not a developer. I'm more on the bedside, which means, but I'm a white hat, which means that I'm testing out the Microsoft technology, but of course I'm not working for Microsoft. Today, we're going to talk about really interesting topic, at least for me, which is about hiding and detecting traces, which technically means that whenever you are hacked or whenever somebody tries to do something to your computer, the question is, what kind of operations can we do, for example, to trace this person? I'm not talking only about logging and all these footprints that are left in the operating system, because this is not a forensic session. We are not analyzing the computer. We are checking out how, with Windows internals, we can play a little bit with the operating system. So if you are a developer on the kernel level, there is a chance that the session is going to be maybe easy for you. If you're an IT pro, I believe that debugger, this is not the tool that we, because I'm also an IT pro, normally use. But we can make a debugger to be a really, really useful tool for us whenever we are doing the investigation and something happened. And I would like to show you how to do a couple of these things. As I said, I'm doing a penetration testing, so I really care about how to hide myself. I know that if it's about IT administrators, it's not totally easy to discover this kind of traces. Okay, so if it's about our agenda, it's really simple as usual. I usually keep the agenda pretty simple. So first of all, we're going to talk about how the code is injected into a machine. So what are the ways? And surprisingly, the ways are not very difficult. I would say they're rather obvious because there are not many ways you can actually nowadays get to the operating system. And how to launch the code, because this is the different story. So how what user can do with the code to have it launched. Of course, on his account, or maybe with some specific privileges, or maybe it's a rootkit, so it's a completely different story. We're going to talk about this kind of situations. Hiding and detecting, this is the cooler part of the session. It's a little bit more complicated because we're going to play on the kernel level. So I will show you how to use a small technique of the modifying objects in kernel, which is kind of geeky stuff, so that you got like a total control on the operating system, because the kernel layer, it's of course below the user layer, and there are totally different rules that are available. So we're going to play a little bit with these. And of course, all rootkits are working in this layer. And I'm not going to show you, you know, these fancy tools with rootkits and so on, because I would like to teach you how actually rootkits work. So we're going to do the same operations as rootkits do, but from the debugger level. So I won't be using any tools, maybe some of these just to help myself. But if it's about how to play with kernel, we're going to play with the kernel directly. Okay, so what's the story? Well, I will say something that is really challenging, but Microsoft operating system, when you just install it, like out of box, it's secure by default. Do you agree with me? No? Do you trust me? Okay, so no. Okay, so the idea of the Microsoft operating system, and specifically in this case Windows 7, is that this operating system is completely certified and can be used by the military. Whatever it means, of course, because there are some rules that military needs to follow, but if the military needs to follow some rules, usually it means that the operating system is, possible to provide you secure services. There is also other thing that is worth mentioning. There is something that is called common criteria. And Microsoft uses also something that is called common criteria whenever they build a new software. And technically, it means that every new stuff that is produced nowadays, it's like totally managed with the PowerShell. So PowerShell, it's, of course, as everybody knows and everybody's talking about it, technology that it's worth knowing, and common criteria by Microsoft, which means that anything in the operating system can be managed by PowerShell. And that's why you've got PowerShell 3 in Windows 8, and Windows 8 can be totally managed with that. Okay, so bringing the story to the field. As you noticed, nowadays we do have a lot of attacks that are actually human-based. You know the story of Stuxnet, right? I will show you during the presentation how to infect the machine with the Stuxnet code. I've been analyzing Stuxnet with my team for a long time, and it's a really cool piece of code, really dangerous. And what the Stuxnet was attacking, tell me, what was the goal? Centrifuges, exactly. So that's not something that has something in common in IT with IT, right? It's more like a human-based attack. And everything was possible because some certificates were stolen. So actually somebody came to the place, for example, to Realtek, and this person stolen certificates so that we are able actually to use it and so on. We are attacking the centrifuges. Come on, it's no longer a virus anymore. Maybe you know the really famous virus. It was written by Polish people. Maybe that's why it was so cheap. But it was called .eater, and the name stands for itself because every time you put a dot, there was a Pac-Man that appeared, and it was like eating the dot. So everything that you were creating with a dot was not possible because dot was eaten. So this was the virus. Sounds like, you know, funny story, but a little bit annoying. This is what viruses are for. But now the goal is a little bit different, and it's really important to hide traces from the people that are doing the investigation. Okay, so a couple of things at the beginning. Logging mechanisms. So whenever we are doing something, there are a lot of mechanisms that are logging our operations. And I don't want to make it obvious, but you've got many logs in the operating system. And it's not just Event Viewer. By the way, who of you have never seen the Event Viewer put your hands up? You? Did you? No? You were in the back. Okay. Yeah, you did? Okay, watch your head. Don't steal it. Give it to him. I don't know what to say. Okay, so logs, Event Viewer. So these are the files that are available in the operating system. Kernel traces. So kernel is doing its own job. Whenever something is happening in kernel, it will be really nice to know it. How do we talk to kernel? Then, well, we need to connect to kernel somehow. We use the kernel mode objects, but if you would like to actually inject something in the kernel, you need to have a direct connection with kernel. And there is a method to do this. We will work on it. Couple of other things like notifications. Whenever you've got some events that are working in the operating system because you've created them, then they will notify you about specific operation. So a lot of logging mechanism, SQL application-based, and so on, as you see on the slide, that are useful to search for the information. And sincerely, it's not easy. Whenever something is happening, it's not easy to find the trace. So we need to know where to look for. And these are the possibilities. So pick, of course, at least several of these whenever you are doing the tracing. Okay, so for that, I do have a small demo for you. And we're going to play a little bit with some logs. And I'm going to show you a really nice technique. It's really simple, but it's possible. If you would like to cheat on administrative account in Windows, how to do this. Okay. So, let me switch to my virtual machine first. Okay. that's it. So first of all, I will open up the event viewer. And first demo, it's not really fascinating, so let's browse through the demo pretty quickly. And if we jump to logs, you see, well, in comparison to Windows XP, that there are many improvements made. And Microsoft was always saying that if you would like to create your own log to be available through Event Viewer, it's not just application system security log, then you were able to do this always. But I don't know, just developer didn't want to create them. So Microsoft said, OK, so we'll create some of these. And here you have applications and services logs. So I will go to Microsoft, Windows, and I will go to the very particular log, because I do have here a terminal services installed. Now they are called remote desktop services. But the log is called terminal services. That's cute, I think. OK. So operational. And here you have the information what is actually happening. This is actually a lie. My role is installed. But the only thing that we have here is that whenever the user authentication succeeded to the remote desktop, then you see the information that it actually succeeded. So the question is, if it does not succeed, where is the log? Come on, warm up in the morning. Exactly. So it's in security. Awesome. So when I go to Windows log and security, then I'm going to see whenever something is wrong. I do have here a custom view, and I have audit failure so that I know whenever something is not working correctly. Perfect. So this is the second place you should go whenever you would like to monitor something regarding the remote desktop services. OK, the next question is, if somebody connects to port 3389, where should we go? No. No. And that's the case, right? So we are connecting actually to a port. So it's a different layer. We need to go to the Windows firewall log. So we need to monitor users' authentication to remote desktop services. We need to have three logs to go to check out if everything was OK. The best thing is that if somebody would like to connect to remote desktop services service using port different than the legit one, let's put it this way, then nobody will monitor it, at least with the tools that we have in the operating system. Let me show you this. So I do have here, of course, remote desktop services. And I do have here client. So I will make it a little bit smaller. And I will log in myself, MSTSC, as, for example, test user. Why not? So I will connect. And if I put the wrong password, it's password, but I was not able to authenticate, then I'm going to have this log over there. Oh, this is not this. Let me. Oh, this was actually this. This is the time. Where is it? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I've done it. Oh, maybe that's the log, local service. Sounds good. Let me check out quickly. Oh, didn't work. That's interesting. So let me check the first log with the remote, the terminal services. I will refresh it again. And I will see that, yeah, we've got a connection that we received. And this is basically it. And over there, let me actually refresh it one more time so that we could catch this. Yeah, OK. Let's open this to make it a little bit larger. Error occurred during login. Not very positive. Let me go with the administrator. This is not the best advertisement for Microsoft logging, right? Then I should be able to authenticate, I guess. Yeah, it takes some time. So it should be actually OK. So I will go to remote desktop operation log. Oh, yeah, and I'm there. That's very good. I will kick off admin. Yes, and password that you already know. And in terminal services, the only thing I've got is that I've received a connection and the user authentication succeeded. That's pretty interesting. But if it's about this log, I don't know why it's not there. It's, you know, demoguts. But normally it should appear that the user was not actually available to authenticate. I do have my previous trials, so I can show you the previous ones. And I have this test user that failed. So this is the log that you're going to see, that we were not able to authenticate. OK, cool. So yeah, and that's positive information. OK, so this is the first thing, is that we need to check the three areas here. And the other thing is that we do have here also the firewall log. So I will just quickly jump to Windows. And it's System32. And it's log files. And it's firewall. That's user-friendly, right? And here we have pfirewall.log. And this log needs to be enabled on the profile that is servicing your connection, right? So if I go to type pfirewall log, and I will do pipe find. Oh, I'm sorry. And I will search for 10, for example, 3389. I'm going to see the connection that was happening. And this is actually the last one on the list. This is the connection that was happening on my client machine. So something that I wanted to prove you at the beginning of our presentation is that if I would like to connect on, let's say, 5-4s and connect. OK, now I should have it on the firewall. Let me search for 5-4s. I've got the information that the connection was dropped, but I do have it only because in Windows Firewall, I do have a rule that is actually blocking port 5-4s. If this was not there, so let me show you how it works. We are not able to monitor the traffic that is not defined on the operating system level. So I will connect with the 5 at the end. Of course, I'm not able to do this. Let me switch to the console and do the find string one more time with the 5 at the end. And as you see, nothing is monitored. So this is the first thing to remember. If something is not configured, it's not monitored because we do not have tools available. Operating system, it's totally possible to be monitored, but we need to know where to connect. And apparently, Windows Firewall, it's not catching that. That's something that you're going to see probably on the edge if somebody would like to connect and you're not able to do so. But in Windows Firewall, no. OK. Any questions regarding this? If you had any questions, just put your hands up, OK? We need to have this session as much beneficial as possible. OK, so the next demo that I would like to show you is some part written in the PowerShell. So what I'm doing here, and if you are not familiar with PowerShell, that's not a problem. You will get the script anyway. But what I'm doing here is actually I am monitoring the registry whenever something pops in the registry, some new key is created and so on. This is the method to monitor it. What are your methods? How do you monitor the registry? And usually, people do not monitor the registry. So how do you know during the installation process what kind of keys are created? And you're like, maybe we will use some registry editor to search for something new or something that we don't like. Registry is a very important file in the operating system. And it's really important to know what kind of things are created during the installation phase. So how to monitor that? So what I do have here, the script is very simple. So I do have here a definition of some variables, and I will be saving the log in the creg.log, and I'm defining the local machine key, and I do have my own key created so that I do not have this massive engine monitoring what is being saved in the registry, just in my simple key. And because I like, you know, the cheap fancy stuff, which is, for example, whenever the new key is created, I would like to hear this beep sound so that, you know, I'm not checking the log every time. It's like beep, and I will know that something is created. You know, the operating system sounds are always funny. Over there, I do have a variable in which I do have some operations that is assigned here. And what I'm doing, I'm actually creating, I would say, a kind of function, but this is the operating system event, using WMI. And whenever there is a change made in the registry, then I will know it because there is this WMI that is listening for the changes in the registry. So it's not a PowerShell session, forgive me. We won't go through PowerShell. It's not a PowerShell session. I would like to show you the ways how to do this. So if you would like to reproduce this in your environment, no problem. We'll be playing with script, and at the end of the session, I do have a link for you because many people were asking, by the way, for the tools from yesterday, right? Okay, so it would be the smartest way, and the only way would be to publish them on the web, and they are available on the web. So at the end of the session, I will give you the link. And this script, it's not there, but I will upload this too, just like in the next 5 minutes after the session is over, so you can download it. So don't worry. Okay, so what do we need to do? We need to register the event here. So let me actually execute the script, and I will show you how things are working. So first of all, we're going to run this one, and it's OK. So this is the result. Comments completed successfully, blah, blah, blah. OK, I'm going to run this one. Awesome. And I'm going to register the event. Great. Yeah, and this is the event working here. So the thing is that I do have here registry, and this is a software key, and I do have here a key. So I may create something like a string value and something new, string value, for example. And if I go to C drive, I do have this file here created, and I do have the values that I've created. It's not perfect. As you see, it is just a PowerShell script to show you that this is actually possible to monitor things that are in the operating system. And this is so easy. Why we're not doing this? So as you see, it's possible. OK, so if somebody saves something to the registry, because registry, this is the repository to keep all the settings, you will know it. OK, another thing to show you. It's a pretty simple operation. Let me close this one so that it's not messing with our view. Okay. It's to play a little bit with the something that is called admin account rename. Do you rename your admin account, by the way? Yeah? Okay. It's like on the top of the list, whenever you are securing your operating system. Awesome. So watch that. Secpol.msc, which is the local security policy. And over there, in security options, so local policies, security options, you've got this rename administrator account option, right? This is what you use. Okay, so let's call him admin. Yeah, okay, and nobody will notice. Yeah, so the operation is done. But additionally, I would like to show you one simple thing. It's not bad to rename it, but it's like totally obvious because of the seat of the user, so it's complicating things just a little bit. Okay, so users, and then I will go to test user. This is my user for the demo. And I will go to account, and I will change the user logon name to administrator, yes? Awesome. Cool. So the question is, what kind of tools are logging what? Right? Are we logging the display name of the user? Usually not. We are logging the logon name of the user, right? Which means that every time we get the information in the log about the user, it's going to be administrator. This is a nice way to hide yourself. Okay, so what I will do, I will go again to the event viewer, which is closed right now because I've done it. Okay, applications and services logs. And I will open up the custom views, the audit failure, and I will go to Microsoft Windows and again the remote desktop, which is here, remote connection manager. Great. So over there, I will open up MSSC and I will log in as administrator. And I will set up the password of the test user. Okay. And let's check out the log, if there is something new. Okay. So we do have a connection established. That's pretty nice. And on that side, we do have the obvious information that we are not able to log into the domain controller, so that's pretty obvious. But in the security log, let me refresh it again, we're going to have information that this is actually administrator who could not log on because the user has not been granted the requested logon type at blah, 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 blah. What do you think? It shouldn't be like this, right? So every time you make a login and you check out further information, check out more. Because Event Viewer is just the first tool to go to get the general idea what is happening. But later on, you need to do a little bit more research. So obviously, the administrator has not been granted the permission to log in. That's not happening, right? And of course, you can imagine the further steps, like the administrator, which is test user, is calling, is like, could you please give me the access over there? And here we go. So not things are not perfect. Okay, so let me actually clean the mess so that we don't have any problems here. And then we are not able to rename the account to administrator because the logon name is used by test user. And let me use test user. Test user. Okay? And I will quickly rename this to administrator. Awesome. So what we've just done, we've changed the name of the account, administrative account, from administrator to admin, and we've assigned the logon name administrator to user because this name was freed up by the operation of the rename in the segpol.msc. So this is what happened. Okay, let me switch back to the presentation. Any questions, by the way? No? Okay. Are you bored? No? Okay. Well, you're so quiet. Okay. So, the next thing is the code delivery. So this is the stuff how the binaries are delivered. And it's pretty logical that binaries are delivered through, for example, the USB stick, for example, through emails, for example, through DLLs, for example, through some vulnerabilities. So these are the operations that are happening. There is, as I said, a little bit obvious information, but something that is, and usually it cannot be monitored on the IT pros level. This is a buffer overflow, which actually does not allow us to check out what was happening because it just happened. So there are many areas in the operating system to play with. Okay, so we do have the methods how the binaries are delivered. And actually, let me show you the first demo. I'm a fan of the demos, not of the theory. And I'm going to show you the things that I've showed yesterday, but they're going to be a little bit extended. So first of all, replacing files. I will go to my client, which is this one. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to boot up. Come on. Oh. That's interesting. That's because it's VMware. Okay, let's do the brute force. Okay, let's do this one more time. Reset. Okay, CD-ROM. And as you saw, I had two entries in the operating system. One we're going to use to connect to the virtual machine remotely to have a total control on it. So this is something which is the part of the next part of the session. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to rename the utilman.exe tool to CMD, so that I would like to show you how easy it is to get access to the computer whenever you do have the offline access, and how to, for example, add yourself to the domain admins group using, simply speaking, the local accounts. Okay, so yes, next, no. This was the BitLocker. My second disk is BitLocker in the virtual machine. So we're going to run the console right now. Okay, this is the entry that we need. And this is a diagnostics and recovery toolset installed. So I just put it from this tool. Okay, so if we go to D, it's going to be C there. And this is our Windows folder. So what we need to do, and let me enlarge it again, because so it does not save defaults. So I'm going to properties, and it's going to be font, and let's make it bigger so that last rows could see. Windows, system 32, and that's it. And we're going to do rename, utilman.exe to utilman.exe, back. Okay, and the next thing is copy cmd.exe to utilman.exe. So what just happened is that I've renamed the utilman, which is the keyboard that you get on the Win logon screen, and I've copied cmd.exe to be a utilman, so that whenever we boot up on the Win logon screen, we're going to have a console, and we will have the, be careful, local system privileges. Okay, so, restart. This is a refreshing operation, right? Okay, Windows 7, things are okay. This is our machine waking up. Okay, and we will create later on a startup script so that whenever the admin logs in, we actually add ourselves to the domain admins group. Insert password. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a blonde, so forgive me. It was super easy. Of course, we don't have access to this computer. Okay, that's it. Over. Here we are. Yeah, in the authority system. Yeah, and that's it. That's pretty easy. Okay, so what do you need to know at this stage? Who is locally on the computer, right? So what we're going to run, it's net and local group. Administrators, yes. And here we have the users that are listed, that are the local administrators. And as you see, Paula, she's a local administrator. So why not reset a password of the local admin? Everybody has some local admin locally, right? So there is some account that is used by IT people to manage the computers and so on. So let's reset the password of it. And user can do this at home. Awesome. So net user, Paula, password. Awesome. So that's technically it, right? And what do we need to do right now is just to close this console and log in as Paula. switch user. As administrator locally, right? And so on and so on. This is very easy. Okay, so this is the first part of the demo. The next part is going to be a little bit more appealing. So, any questions for now? No? So what we're going to do right now as a user, because we just log in as an administrator to the machine, and we're like, okay, it will be nice to be in the domain, because there is nothing fancy to be local. So you are thinking like, I'm working in this company, and it would be really nice if admin could log in so that I could, as an admin, as a Paula here, put to his account the startup script, adding myself and creating an account, of course, in the domain, because he can. So there are two possible scenarios right now. First scenario is that we may, for example, ask him to log in remotely on his account, and we may call him and say, like, with the cute voice, "Dear John, I'm sorry, but, you know, I do have some problems with the network connection. Could you please come?" And John, of course, is going to try out remotely if it's possible to connect. But you've just plugged off the cable, and John cannot connect, right? So he'll be like, "Okay, Paula, I will come and help you." I'm like, "So cute, I haven't seen you for a while." And he'll be like, you know... he'll be like super happy to come, and I will be super happy because I will just have my account added to the domain, right? That's social engineering. Okay. And so the next part of it, and this is not over, don't worry, it's not over. We're going to make this scenario a little bit more appealing. So the next part is to get access to... the specific computer with this possibility. So let me be back to the scenario. Okay. This is the domain. Here we go with the client. Okay. So, okay. Great. So what we're going to do, actually, we're going to search for the startup folder over there, and we're going to right-click on it and open all users, so that everybody could have the script. And I do have this script prepared here. So if I edit here so that I don't need to write it, you see that net user Paula, password, add domain, because this is a domain admin that is logging in, and net group domain admins Paula add domain, which is simple because I would like to have myself added to the domain. Great. So, prim, doo-doom. Yes, and let me jump to the domain controller and check out if there is no Paula, just for sure. You see, no Paula, only Pluto. So this is it, and this is in like every, this is a startup folder, so everybody will get it. And I will just, you know, log off and wait for the admin to log on. So this is the scenario with coming and so on. So insert, and I'm gonna switch user and log in as administrator, of course, to secure. So let me actually put it here. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, something happened. And I made the pulse at the end so that you could see that the command completed successfully. But of course, admin, he does not need to see this. And that's that's it. Yes. So of course, what we need to do, we need to jump back here, refresh it a little bit, and the Paula should be here, right? And if I go here and check out who I am, member of, I'm the member of the domain admins, right? So, and so on and so on. You can, you know, wash your hair to blonde and work on the topic a little bit. Okay, so this is the scenario that we have. And this is the idea how the code can be launched, how the code can be loaded, and how things in this case are working. Okay, so the next thing that I have to show you is about services. And last time we've played with the good and bad services and the possibility to rename the service when it's alive. And service, whenever it's running in the folder that has no appropriate ACL setup, it's really important to monitor that. OK, so what I would like to show you, I would like to show you a very simple scenario here. So let me switch to the client machine again. And the scenario is that I do have here service running TechEd 2012. And the regular user can modify objects on the folder. I'm here logged in as an admin, just to simplify this scenario. But yesterday, I showed you that this is possible. So if you would like to see that it's actually possible, the session is available online. OK, so security, just to prove that, full control, no full control, modify, yes, for the users. Great. So what I would like to do, I would like to rename the bad file, rename the good file that the service is running on. So let me give the underscore and go to services to show you that. Description, Paula service. Right click, properties, good, right? And I've just renamed it, by the way, and it's running. So the good's going to be, you know, the bad. Good. Great. So we are waiting for the service to be restarted, right? And I will restart it. OK. And that's basically it. And the very interesting thing is that this bad thing is actually downloading stuff from the internet. So we're going to see this on the desktop. The service is working every 15 seconds. So you've got to, you know. And this is a little bit annoying. Imagine yourself as an admin being pwned by the long cat. And you delete it, and you refresh it. And it's like appearing and again, and the long cut, and the long cut appears again. So yeah, it's going to appear. 15 seconds, it's, you know, you think that everything is OK, but it's really not. So the question is, how to monitor that? Who is saving this terrible file to my desktop? And it's like frustrating, right? So couple of things to do. We do have here the process monitor available. And we may specify several filters here. So I will actually remove it. And what we may say is that the path contains and specify the name of the file that say it saves on the desktop, pwned.txt. OK. So let me add it, and let me click OK, and let me go to the process monitor, and let's start the filtering. Oh, OK, so let me do this like this. Yeah, filter is contains include, yeah. So it's actually positive. OK, so the best thing here is that we do have here explorer.exe working. Oh my gosh, you know the file, wget? This is a tool that downloads stuff from the internet, from the command line, and you're like, some things are wrong. Because we do have something being downloading the files from the internet. OK, so let's go to properties, process, and then we check that this file is actually downloaded from www.bestmalware.gov. Somebody is tracing me, right? And that's not a positive situation. So you are like, OK, so let's monitor wget so that we could know a little bit more about the whole situation. So wget, and then it's going to be .exe. And let's click OK. Yes. And now we know a little bit more that we actually do have wget being run by cmd.exe. So this is my CMD that is running something. And the process monitor, what I'm showing you, can actually do a fantastic job if something is not OK. OK, so we can actually browse through this information and check out what do we have here. And for example, we click properties and check out what is wrong with the cmd.exe. Ooh, and we've got this pjlaunch.cmd being running in, say, Windows. So who is actually doing this? Okay, and let me specify one filter more. So I will jump here and say that it should be cmd.exe. Yes, the path contains cmd.exe. And we may browse through the whole path here, and we have here some good.exe running. That's interesting. And this guy, it's a weird name. So we could actually do a little bit more filtering here and specify that actually this is the process name that is good.exe. Yeah. And we can monitor all the situation that was happening over there. By the way, the script is working like this. This is a service that is called good.exe, and the service is saving in the profile the file that is entidata.dat. Would you guess that this is a wrong file, by the way? Entidata.dat, entiuser.dat? Yes, exactly. So this is a script that is converted to CMD that is downloading the file from the bestmalware.gov that is saving the data on our desktop. That's like a complicated path. Okay, so now we know what is wrong with that. So what we need to do over here is to go to Process Explorer, for example, and check out where is the good.exe. And here we go. And because it's pink, and we can see that this is a service, we know that this is a service, and we can stop it. So this is how the example of the monitoring can look like. Okay, so let me switch back to the presentation. Any questions so far? Sounds scary a little bit, at least? Okay, that's good. So, launching evil code. There are several areas in the operating system that are usually hit by the wrong stuff. So, as you see, it's a DLL, because there are many DLLs running in the operating system, and they contain code that is in the memory, that can be called for, and so on. Explorer.exe, as we already know, because the user owns it. So all the .exe processes, including lsass.exe, Local Security Authority Subsystem, this is the one to hit, and I'm going to show you how. Drivers, obviously, because they may run in the kernel mode. You would like to get to the kernel mode. When you get there, we are like totally in control. And of course, services, this is what I've showed you. The path manipulation is a very simple thing. I won't show you this, that's too easy for the presentation, but test one thing at home. Do, for example, create a CMD batch, like displaying you, hi, how are you, or something like this, and name it netstat.cmd and put it in the user profile. What's going to happen? You will see your script because it runs as a first. Yeah. Okay, so this is one of the ideas. Ooh, that's scary. Okay, services in security. And this is another scenario, how to monitor things. But in this case, the service is going to be a really nasty creature, because what it does, it actually connects to the internet. And it's checking out if there is a file on the web with the specific name, and if within the file there is a specific word, and if the word is there, do not execute any code. But if somebody removes the word, execute it. So imagine this evil admin going to Hawaii, drinking, you know, caipirinha, and being like, I'm bored with this company. And then things execute inside. Let me show you how it works. It's a really evil scenario. Okay, so here we are. But what I need to do first, I need to change the interface so that I'm no longer not, I'm breached, because I need to get access to the internet. And I would like to have my network adapter to be not specifically configured to be running in a domain, but I would like to obtain the address automatically. Okay, so that we could get access to the internet. Let me refresh myself. Good, and renew. Yeah. Okay, we are now having access to the internet. Awesome. So Windows and dir.txt files, and this is the file that you saw yesterday. So let me delete it. And when I do dir.txt, it does not appear anymore. That's interesting. Why? Okay, so let me open up the tool that I use for monitoring. And it's really, it's a kind of cheap tool, but it's really nice. It's called Network Miner, and you can run it as an admin and do the monitoring on the interface so that you could capture the traffic that is not normal. Let me put it this way. So here we have a couple of things being captured. And the interesting thing is that I do have here captured files. Let me show you. Okay, so it means that there are some files being asked for. And in this case, this is this update.txt. And it's running. And it's like, what is wrong with that? And usually, some malware, it's connecting to the internet, checking for something. In this case, you see the frequency is pretty huge. But normally, it may be like once a month. To ask once a month, if something is internet in the internet, then do nothing. If it's not there, do something once a month. You won't be able to monitor that. So we need to focus on the specific areas in the network to know what to get. So in this case, we do have this file, and we are wondering how to get information about it. So I would like to show you a really interesting method of monitoring, and I'm going to use the tracing possibility of the operating system. So here you see that it's actually running and it's connecting to the destination port that is increasing. So this is traffic that is not usual. So let me stop it. We don't need it because it's a very consuming operation. So what I will do, I will go to the command line and I'm going to start the trace. So first of all, I need to use the Windows tool that is called Logman. And I need to start the trace. And the trace is going to be like this. Start, and then I need to specify the session that I would like to create, because this is like we are doing the kernel monitoring alive. So I will do start, let's say, tahed, 1, 2, 3, for example. And then I'm going to save it into a file, tahed, 1, 2, 3, ATL, which is the event file. And I'm going to use for that the monitoring filter, and it's Microsoft Windows WinSock, because I would like to monitor a network, and I call it an reference delta. Okay, so we are all set up. What is wrong? Oh, I know, I've forgotten one parameter. You need to schedule this session. Now it's going to be okay. So now it's running, monitoring. We need to wait for like a couple of seconds for the events to be monitored, but we are constantly asking for this file, update.txt, update.txt, and so on. So we are actually good right now, and we can check out what is wrong with the situation. Okay, so for that, we need to start Logman. I will just clear out the view a little bit. Logman. And we need to stop it. Stop. And we need to specify what. So it's going to be ATS. And it's going to be our session, which is tahed 1, 2, 3. Awesome. So the session is kept in the file, which is this ATL file. And we need to convert it to the way that we like to read, actually. Because ATL file, it's not really user-friendly. So for that, we're going to use tracer. PT, tracer. Tracer. Yeah, now it's okay. And now we're gonna use the name of the file. So this is our tahed file, which is this 123, and then we're going to specify the output, which is, for example, tahed123.txt. I've made a... Oh, tracered. Okay. When you're sitting for a long time at the computer, you know. Okay, so we got it. And Notepad, and we're going to open this up. Thank you for helping. And it's a pretty large file. But I would like to show you how to investigate this issue. So, opening. And what we are searching for, and that's going to be a kind of hint. We're going to search for the IP address that this file is actually calling. So it's 85.128 and so on. So I will search for that. And I will go down. And this is it. That's very interesting, because with this event that we have, we do have also something that is called the process ID, which means that we can jump right now to the Process Explorer and check out who is actually producing this traffic. Okay, so let me show you how to do this. So we're going to jump to desktop, we're going to jump to tools, and we're going to jump to Process Explorer. Here we go. Yes, and the ID was, yeah. Yeah, 2700, yeah. So we can search by the process ID, and we can find it. Where is that? And here it is, and this is a service. Does it sound easy? What do you think? Kind of, right? Because we need to find a way how to jump from one side to another. But this is the way how we can trace it. So Logman and Tracer, that's the tool that you would like to use over there. Okay, so the next thing I'm going to show you is the way how to load the DLL, where to put it. So to load the DLL, you may do this in several ways, but the easiest way is to inject it offline in the place within which operating system will take it into consideration automatically. This is like being super lazy, because the operating system will do the job for us. We don't need to think about how to inject the code and so on. So let me open up the registry. I will do this online, but I will show you where to put it. So for that, we need to go to, let me go up, local machine, system, and then you've got these two control sets. Which one is the one? Which one is the one that we're going to use? First one. Select. The second one. Okay, let me tell you. Select, current, and then we have the value saying which one is the one that we're going to use. And you will see the same in the offline mode. So the first one is the one that we're going to use. Last known got configuration, this is the second one. So we go over there, and then we go to control, and then we go to LSA, local security authority, and then you've got notification packages. Remember from the previous session? So we would like to be notified whenever we are changing the password, and this is the place in which you put Pola spy DLL. And then you reboot the operating system. And then the DLL is going to be in the memory automatically. Okay. So the next demo I have for you, it's Stuxnet. As you see, my machine is disconnected from the network. And I'm going to use something that is called LNK vulnerability, which means that every time you build a link, the shortcut, the explorer.exe is taking this into consideration and is resolving the path that is underneath, right? Whenever you build a shortcut for cmd.exe, how it is possible that we do have this beautiful black icon visible on the shortcut? Because Explorer reads it, right? So it loads the source to show us the information about it. So this is how the vulnerability was created, and Stuxnet used it. Okay, so to play with this a little bit, and this is a very short demo, we've built something that is called Stuxnet Extractor. Polish people are lazy, We don't want to, you know, struggle with injecting the code. So let's the code inject for us. So we've built something that is called Stuxnet Extractor to be able to extract the Stuxnet based on something that is in WinObg tool. And this is actually the address of the USB object types. Come on. This is the address of the USB stick. I will run it as an admin. Yeah, and that's way, way better. Let me go there. USB. Storage. This is the USB. So it's not very user-friendly, as you see. USB prod, USB disk, blah, blah, blah. But we need to put it in the LNK file to be able to inject the Stuxnet. OK, so the background is that Stuxnet creates, injects drivers into memory, plus it replicates lsass.exe 2 times. So let me show you how it works. First, I will go to View, Refresh, Update Speed, and Pause, so that you know actually what is happening. And over there, I'm going to open up the console, so CMD. And I'm going to go to the pen drive that I have here. It's, by the way, with Google logo, if it means something. Stuxnet extractor. And then I'm going to extract the Stuxnet. Stuxnet consists of the LNK file. So let me actually jump into this folder. And 2 TMP files. One is the large one, and one is the small one, which means that the small one loads to the memory the large one based on the vulnerability used by the LNK shortcut here. So you see the files, right? Everybody can see the files? Yes? OK. So let me switch to the folder, which is this B and so on, and pay attention to one thing. I will open it up, and it's empty. Right? Oh, let me just jump here. Oh, I'm touching it. Oh, okay. So whenever I load it, whenever I open up the window, Stuxnet loads, and it disappears. It hides itself. And then is this thing happening, which is kind of nasty, because Stuxnet is loading into memory. And you see this circle. And then we're going to see a couple of changes on the operating system side. So things are happening. Look at this. We do have additional 2 lsass.exe processes, right? And under that, we can. I would like to show you one thing, which is very nasty too. I will go to lower pane view, DLLs. I will run the process explorer with the administrative privileges. Run as admin. And the nasty thing here is that if I go to system, I do have the drivers listed. And Stuxnet, except for creating 2 additional lsass.exe files, just by using the vulnerability, look, we've got 3. It shouldn't be like this. We do have a drivers, which is this mrxcls.sys and the one that is below. If I go to properties and I verify that certificate, it's verified, signed by Realtek. Because from Realtek, the certificate was stolen. How nasty is that? It was a serious problem. Now the certificate is on CRL, so it's no longer that fancy. But if you do not update your computer, then it's going to work. OK, so let me be back here with this positive accent of Stuxnet. And a couple of more things. Accountability idea, done. So hiding and detecting traces. A couple of things are available in the operating system. And there is something that is called a protected process. Protected process, what it does not allow us to get information about the process because it's protected. So for example, if we go to the client machine, let me switch here. And if we run, for example, the player, not even playing the music. Let me go and find AudioDG, or maybe I will just do this here, Task Manager. Yeah, that's a very positive view. Okay, let me go to AudioDG. Come on, where are you? Let me close it. I'm gonna play something. Okay, and then Task Manager. And AudioDG. Yeah, here we go. So, dump file, access is denied. Ask your administrator. You love it? Me too. It's like, I am administrator, right? So what do we need to do in this case to get this information? Because this is how we may hide ourselves. We need to get something that is called a virtual machine monitor. And I am monitoring all the machines, plus with the possibility to run the debugger. Okay. So let me reboot this machine, restart it, to this second entry that we have, so that we are actually able to connect to the machine and use the technique that is called direct kernel object modification. Cool, and this is it. And additionally, I would like to show you one thing. I do have a debugger here that just opened. And the best thing is that, let me hide it for a while, is that we are waiting for my control. If I say go, then this beautiful sparkling logo in the back is gonna pop up. If I say no, it won't. If I say go, then I am able to log in. If I say no, things will stop. What do you think about it? Okay, so let's process finish. Okay. And so on and so on, right? As you see, we do have this, we do have this account. Test mode. Awesome. So I'm going to run here, and I'm going to pause it. .cmd3. And it's going to be .cmd3, and it's going to be C users administrator, and it's a desktop. I'm going to load the commands, so it's going to be a little bit easier. And this is tahat.txt. Okay. Where is it? Oh, okay. So let me actually do this a little bit differently. I've got it here. Okay. So this is the debugger script to run it. And what I would like to show you is that how to hide and detect processes, plus how to make them a little bit more available than they are. So to do this, I will just copy several commands here, and of course I will explain you everything so that we are actually aware of what is happening here. So let me pause it and be back to the machine. Yeah, and the debugger and go. Okay. So over there I will do the same. So I'm gonna play the music. And over there, in Task Manager, I see that the process ID of the AudioDG is 956. And I cannot dump it, because access is denied. So, and this could be done in the reverse way. So for that, what I need to do is to go to the debugger, and of course pause the whole operation, and get a little bit more information about the process itself. So I need to type here exclamation mark process, and then I need to specify 0n, the process ID, which is 956. And I will put 0 here, because I would like to get only a little piece of information. So I do have here the process address. So let me actually call for it. Process and the address. Awesome. And we are now inside the process. So if we would like to play a little bit on it, and for example, remove the protection bit, we are able to do this. So let me show how to do this. First of all, we need to put a mask on the structure of the process here. And let me put it. What I'm doing here, and let me enlarge it a little bit so that everybody could see this. It's going to be, let's say, 14 or 16 and consolas. What I'm doing here is that I am putting a mask. I'm displaying a protection bit, and then I will put the mask so that I could actually take off the protection from the process. And because, and sorry, I know it's not totally easy, but I would like to show what kind of power do we have, is that I am moving here in the structure, flex 2, the mask using 11 bits. Because the process, the protection, is the 11th bit in the process structure. So how to call for it? And that's it. And if we go again, then it's 0, and it was 1. So then we need to go to go, switch back to the client, take this audio DG, and dump it. You see? We are working on a kernel layer. We have like a total power, right? And so on and so on. And this is how you can hide processes too. Okay, another operation that I would like to show you is the situation in which, for example, we may hide the process from the list. And it's not very difficult to discover it because it's in the memory, but the operation is pretty simple, because in the operating system, when you list all the processes, how do you know what is the list? And there is a two-directional list. It's called Flink and Blink. So Flink is the next one, and Blink is the previous one. And every process has its own Flink and Blink. That's pretty easy, because I'm showing to the next one, and this guy is showing to myself. Right? So it's like we know where we are. Awesome. So we do have this notepad running over there, and this is 2204. So in the debugger, we need to specify actually that. Okay, so it's, let's say, process, and it's going to be 0 and 2204, and it's going to be the 0 flag. And now we've got the address here, so let's copy that. And let's do process, and then let's put it here, so that we do have the context. Yeah, and we are now in Notepad. So the best thing is that we can actually list the whole e-process structure, so how the process inside looks like. And I'm calling the kernel object right now. And this is how the process looks like. If we browse through the options, you can see everything that you want to need, including the fact that this is the Notepad. So what we need to do, we need to cut off the Flink and Blink from the operating system list. And I will create two variables for that. All things are going to be available for you. So the instructor in the tools folder, don't worry. And I'm going to create another one. And I would like to call them to be able to actually cut them off from the operating system. So let me specify the offset too, so that we actually know where to call within the process structure. Okay. And now we need to modify the list. And it's going to be a very simple operation. Let me go here. Exactly. And let me modify the second variable. So what we are doing right now is that whenever you've got Notepad, there is the previous process and there is the next process on the list. So the previous process, as the next process, is showing something else rather than Notepad. So we are actually cutting the element from the list. And if you would like to find out where is the Notepad, then we need to go to the machine and refresh the list. And Notepad, you see it? No? Okay, but you see it here? But it's not on the list. Yeah. Sorry for making this a little bit harder. I hope, you know, now it's going to be easier. So this is the whole situation, and this is how we can protect and hide the processes from the list. And there are also many other possibilities. For example, hooking applications and playing around the kernel and so on. This is what we can do with the kernel mode. If it's about the general security, bringing us to the end of the presentation. 3, immutable laws of security. Whenever you have a physical access to the computer, as you saw, whenever you can get access to the kernel mode, it's no longer your computer. And even if you feel like somebody hacked you or something wrong was happening, and even if you feel like you've managed to do and solve the problem, I think that it would be best to just reinstall operating system. You know what I mean? Because there are many things that are hiding, and it doesn't mean that whenever you do the cleaning, you are there when you want to be. Okay, so monitor your operating system. Remember that it's not that obvious whenever you delete something. Things may be in the memory still, and you may not notice this. If you would like to get a little bit more content, I would like to warmly invite you to a panel that we are doing with, for example, Andy Malone that is sitting here, and we're going to discuss a couple of things about hacktivism. And please fill in the evaluations. I would really appreciate that. Where's that? Okay, thank you.